How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a multi-award-winning podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, for over a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics in over 200 episodes. For the past 3 years, DNA Today has won the People's Choice Best Science and Medicine Podcast Award. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. In the last episode of DNA Today, we started our conversation with Victoria Gray, who is the first person in the world to be cured from a genetic condition from CRISPR. Victoria is a patient advocate and international speaker from Mississippi. She's also a wife and mother of four children. Since being treated with CRISPR, she's been featured in nearly every major publication, including PBS, NPR, Forbes, Good Morning America, New York Times. The list goes on and on and on. And in the first part of our conversation on episode 288, she shared about her experiences prior to being cured, including her sickle cell pain crises and the medical racism she faced. If you haven't heard this episode yet, I very much encourage you to go back. Again, that's episode 288, and listen. This is one of the most raw interviews we have had on the show over the last decade. So if you're going to listen to an episode of DNA Today, please go listen to episode 288 right before this one. But in this episode, it's the second part of our interview with Victoria, and she talks about inspiring others to pursue the CRISPR treatment and dives into her own CRISPR experience, including the decision-making process to go for it, the treatment regimen itself, and her quality of life today after being cured. There was even someone that, I don't know if you want to tell the story of, you know what I'm talking about, of surprising individual that was very much a fan of yours and that you really influenced his life.
Yes, I had the opportunity to surprise Jimmy. So through Good Morning America, and that feeling, I can't describe it. I was so overwhelmed with joy. He was full of joy. And to actually meet someone that was inspired by my story was amazing. And he moved forward with CRISPR, and he's had the same experience I had. And I never would have thought that to be possible, because I went from being just a voiceless sickle cell patient who was going through struggles and afraid to die and leave my children behind. And Jimmy had those same fears. He wanted to be a part. He was expecting a child at the time when he began. And he wanted to be an active part of his child's life. And he had the same fears I had of being afraid to go to the emergency room. So we suffered a lot at home, which had us bedbound from the bed to the couch and just to the bathroom, not being able to be a part of life and be with our spouses. So to know that I inspired him to move forward with this treatment that brought about this change, this transformation in his life, that was enough for me. Like, to know that I changed one person's life, impacted it in a positive way.
And it's so much more than one. Jimmy's story is one of many. Because, as I said, you're the first person that was treated with CRISPR, not just for sickle cell, but for all genetic conditions, right? And I mean, obviously, we've talked about a lot of your experiences and just how horrible and debilitating pain crises have been throughout your life. Was that the motivating factor of it got to a point where you were just not able to live your life to the fullest, as you said, and be active in your kids' life? You have four kids, so that's got to be a busy life of just keeping up with them and being an active parent, as you said. Were those the aspects that motivated you the most to become the first person and enter the clinical trial for this CRISPR therapy that
essentially cured your sickle cell, as we're going to be talking about.
Yes. My children, wanting to be here for my children was my biggest motivation, because at first I had pretty much given up on trying to be better. But once I got that phone call from my son's teacher telling me that, she actually called me in for a meeting. When I got there, she said his behavior had changed and he was just acting out because he was afraid I was going to die. So hearing that out loud from someone else, I knew then I had to fight to be here for my children, because if just the thought of me dying was hurting them and causing them to have behavior issues and wanted to be just around me all the time because they didn't know how much time they had left, I knew I had to be there. I couldn't miss helping my daughters pick out wedding dresses.
Of course, Victoria. I mean, that is just is so impactful in that you have highlighted just how important mental health is, that you talked about for yourself and just right. having such a hard, if for you, it wasn't a diagnostic odyssey or, oh, you received a diagnosis, but learning more of, oh my gosh, this is such a serious condition, and knowing people with sickle cell that passed away, even the person you mentioned in the same hospital as you were in at the time, and thinking about that. But then, and I'm not a parent, but I've heard from so many parents that, you know, have this similar mindset of wanting to be mama bear and be protective of that, just escalates it so much in terms of wanting to protect your kids, but also be there for your kids, of having both. Yeah. And just the anxiety of knowing as your kids have gotten older, of them understanding it on a deeper level of what sickle cell is and how it affects you or affected you, right? Things are past tense now, which is great. But I mean, what type of information were you presented when learning about the clinical trial, like to figure out, was this a good match for you? Were there other types of like consequences, side effects that they brought up, like off-target effects is something I think about with CRISPR, that they're like, hey, you have to know this because, I mean, clinical trial and you were like the first person. So that must have been very scary. And obviously your symptoms were severe enough to lead you to such an extreme measure to be taken, which turned out amazing, but it must have been scary to be learning this and making that decision.
Well, I wasn't terrified. When Dr. Frangoul, he approached me, I was in the hospital. I was going through a pain crisis, but we was already in the process of the testing to do a haplotransplant. And he was aware of my fears of graft versus host disease. So he presented the CRISPR option to me. He gave me a second option. And he did explain that it was new. It hadn't been done on a person. But he explained what's so crazy is that I happened to look back in my phone on yesterday and saw part of his explanation that I didn't remember.
Really?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. And he explained that it was new and the theory of it was that it could go in and change the gene that was for hemoglobin F to turn that switch back on so I can produce more hemoglobin F, which some sickle cell patients in Africa have sickle cell disease with high hemoglobin F and they don't experience pain crisis because of it. And that this was a possibility of decreasing my pain and my suffering and me not having so much of the side effects or as heart attack and stroke, because I would have a healthier hemoglobin that would deliver the oxygen to my body that I needed. But there was the thought of the first. But my question to him at that time was, only questions I had was there a chance to graft versus host disease? And because that was my biggest fear. And when he said that there was no chance because the cells that were edited would be my own and my body wouldn't attack itself. And then I wanted to know, if I tried this and it failed, could I move forward with a transplant with my brother? And he reassured me that I could do it after a year. After hearing that and going home to pray and talking to God and say, Lord, if this is what you have for me, my gateway to my miracle, remove any fears or hesitation that I may have about it. Give me comfort and peace in it. And when I had comfort, I knew it was God. I felt like this was an answered prayer, because what I feared the most was graft versus host disease over anything else. Once that was off the table, it was a green light for me, a go.
Yeah, because that is a fear.
I didn't have a lot of fears.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a complication that any kind of bone marrow transplant we worry about, because usually bone marrow transplant, it's someone else's cells that don't have the same condition as the person that's receiving it. So that person can make normal blood cells. And it's such a amazing concept and method that they take your and what they did. And, you know, if I'm getting all the science right, they took your bone marrow cells out. They use CRISPR to turn on the hemoglobin F, which stands for fetal. So it, when we're born, we are making certain red blood cells that are kind of in this just fetal, you know, it kind of switches over after we're born, but turning that back on so that you can make healthy round red blood cells that flow in your blood vessels and veins easier than that sickle shape of, then it gets stuck and that causes the pain crises. So being able to turn that on and then putting those cells back in your body, it's a self-transplant in a way that they're, you know, yeah. I kind of use the term, they CRISPR them up, which is not a science term, but they CRISPR them up and then give them back to you. But it's just, it is amazing. I mean, how are you feeling on the day of the procedure when they were taking out the bone marrow cells? And then how long did it take to then edit them with CRISPR and put them back in? Like, what was that timeline like? What were your thoughts during this?
Oh, my goodness. Like, the days for mobilization, that's what they call that process. I would go into the hospital for 3 days. So they would give me the shot in the back of my arm to release my stem cells. And I have to go and get on this machine for hours before the collection. Anywhere up to, could be six.
Wow.
Hours. Where it's pulling my blood out and spinning it. But what I felt like my body was shaking. I said, hold up. I looked over at my husband. I said, is the band shaking?
Oh, no.
And he's like, no. But they told me that was because of the calcium drop.
Ah.
And they just gave me calcium. And then I felt normal again. I watched videos, talked to my husband, took pictures. I really didn't think about it because I knew I was just trying to be better for my babies that was at home. And then I came home for 1 month, and then I had to go back to do the collection again. So I had two collection phases, and both collection required 3 days on that machine.
Wow.
For 6 hours per day. So after the collection was over, I went home, and it took about 2 months for my cells to be ready.
That's longer than I would have thought. Wow.
Yeah, it took 2 months. It don't take 2 months, like Dr. Frangoul explained. It don't take 2 months for the editing process, but they have to check the cells and make sure that they're good before they give them back to you. So quality control.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Then I had, once the cells were ready, I had to go through the conditioning phase. And this was when I received the 4 days of chemotherapy. And
that's to basically get your bone marrow just like completely emptied almost, right? So that you have nothing.
Wipe out the rest of it that's left.
Yeah. Because you don't want to have a mix of your own cells that don't have the hemoglobin F on and some that do. You want to make sure you're replacing it.
Yes, to give make room for the new cells to enter and graft. But those days was uneventful. I didn't get sick or anything. It was just 2 weeks later, after I thought I was all good, I wasn't. Yeah. But I want to talk about infusion day.
Yeah.
The day I received my new cells. Oh, I was so happy. I got all dressed up. I had blue hair. I know you guys seen the picture. blue hair, purple nails. Oh my God. But Dr. Frangle, he just came in. He attached the syringe to my catheter that I had in my chest. And he did a fast push. The fast push, it sped my heart rate up a little bit. But it was only 3 valves, and he manually pushed them in real quick. And after that, I just felt, I even asked him, I said, "That's it?" He said, "Yeah."
Wow.
"That's it, girl." And after the camera crew left out, and it was just me and my dad in the room, I cried.
Oh, wow.
It was, they were tears of joy. I knew that this was the beginning of a new life for me, even though nothing had changed, but yet it was faith. I knew God hadn't taken me through all of that in vain. So I cried, and my dad, he held me, and he just said, "Vicky, I know God got something good in store for you. I know he does." And it was a day of rejoicing.
Wow. And just such a milestone for you of all of the pain over all of the years, and to be like, this is going to change it. This is going to cure me. And you didn't know at the time, again, clinical trial, like we weren't sure how it was going to go, but the role that faith has played with you and your family and just relying on that is, it seems to have really gotten you through a lot of really dark times.
Yes, it did. Growing up with my grandmother, we went to church all the time. And when I received my diagnosis at 3 months, they told my mom then that I would only live to see 7, if that. So, but my grandmother, she always told me once I was old enough to understand, about 4 when I was dealing with my own pain, she said, "Vicky, it's not what the doctor says, but God has the final say. God created you, and he knows you better than anyone else. So he can see you through it no matter what it looks like, no matter what it feels like." So I held on to that.
Yeah.
In my darkest days, that even though sometimes no one else was in the room, that God was there with me. Because there was time where I thought my heart would stop from the pain. I was like, "This is not possible. How can any human handle this amount of pain?"
Yeah.
I just knew my heart would stop, but God helped it. It kept beating, even when I didn't want it to, honestly. But I knew I couldn't give up. I had to trust God's plan. And the way I came about CRISPR and how I found it, I felt like it was something that God had molded just for me. It was purpose. And fate being fulfilled that day, that God had a plan to not only deliver me, but other people dealing with sickle cell disease, rare disease, who had been told, you know, there's nothing we can do, but nothing they can do, but it's always something God can do. He'll put the thought in the right person's mind that they can't sleep because they up thinking about how can I get this bacteria to change genetics, and everybody else think they crazy, but it happens. I'm here.
Just here.
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to God and to the people that managed through those sleepless nights and didn't, you know, just throw away those thoughts out of their head that something like bacteria or a virus can be the answer, you know. And I thank God.
I mean, it's it is remarkable that we had the landmark CRISPR paper, which I can link to in the show notes, around 2012, and less than 10 years later, right? Because it was 2019 that this happened.
Yes, yeah, 2019.
That less than 10 years later, what, I can't even do math, 7 years later, you were getting this. It's just, it's amazing how fast, and it's, as you said, a lot of scientists being like, we got to utilize this bacteria, naturally occurring immune system kind of thing, and turn it into a cure for sickle cell. I mean, how far-fetched does that sound, right? If we told people back in 2012, oh yeah, there's going to be this person named Victoria Gray that is going to get a cure for sickle cell based off something we discovered in bacteria. I mean, it is just, it is remarkable. And I,
yeah, you would think they were back in my day growing up, I was born in the 80s. Mad scientists.
Yep.
All of mad, these are mad scientists. You know, you don't need to treat anybody. You're crazy. But man, it turned, like I like to say, science fiction has now became fact.
I say it all the time on this show, Victoria, like so much. And I want to highlight as we end here of how much your life has transformed since your CRISPR, can I call it a cure? I've been kind of like, can I call it a cure? In your life, has it been a cure?
For me, it has. Because my just a glimpse of my life right before CRISPR, I had an in-home caregiver. She had to help me get in the tub because that was too much for me. She had to help prepare my meals, make my bed, put on my clothes sometimes. I couldn't work. I couldn't go outside and get on the trampoline with my kids. I couldn't fly to be with my husband during deployments. After CRISPR, I take care of Victoria.
Nice.
I comb my own hair. I do my own makeup. I can take a bath. The things people take for granted. I can dress myself. I can get out there and run with my kids, even though my teenage boys are going to beat me.
They're going to run circles around you, but hey, you're running.
Yeah. Look, I'm in the game. I'm in the game. I'm not on the sidelines anymore. I get to be a part of my children's life. My first flight ever was to Washington, D.C. to visit my husband while he was on deployment. And he had been there for me. This was my first time where I felt like I was able to be there for him.
Wow.
And I work full time. My second flight was an international flight.
You just were like, let's do this.
I went from the ground and took off. Things have drastically changed. Like, I'm fulfilling dreams that I could have never imagined. I started off wanting to be a doctor and then went down to trying to be a nurse, and I always had to change my dreams and couldn't even accomplish that because I just wanted to change lives. But now I realize through saying yes to CRISPR treatment, I have possibly saved more lives and touched more lives than I ever would have touched or changed as a doctor.
You already have, Victoria. You already have. And all of the downstream people that right now we have this CRISPR treatment for sickle cell, but this is just the first. We will have CRISPR treatments for so many other disorders, cancer. I mean, so many things that we can't even imagine right now. And right. Someone had to be first. And you said, I'm doing it. You did it for your own life, but you also saw it as an opportunity to do it, to show people like Jimmy, hey,
yes,
this can work and this can change your life. So I don't even know how to thank you enough on behalf of the scientific community, the sickle cell community, people that have genetic conditions. I mean, just so many groups of people that have benefited from you saying, I'm going to take that step and do it. I mean, thank you for not only doing this, but coming on DNA Today and sharing so many vulnerable aspects of your life and what led up to CRISPR. And I can't thank you enough for this incredible conversation and how much you've been able to open up, because I know a lot of times that you've been interviewed, it's quick interviews and you can't necessarily get into it and really share what you want to. So thank you so much, Victoria. I can't express it enough.
You're welcome. And I want to say thank you, Kira. Thank you for having me, giving me this opportunity to share a deeper side of who I am and why I chose to do CRISPR. It wasn't just for me. I knew someone had to open the door because I wanted change. So it was time for me to be brave. And that was my first time where I was in the hospital by choice. You know, sickle cell had always put me there at these crises, but I made a choice to be there this time. And it was a choice to fight.
Wow. Well, Victoria Gray, the first person to be cured from a genetic condition from CRISPR. Thank you.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnatoday.com, where you can also stream all 200 plus episodes of the show, including video versions of interviews recorded in 2021 or later. Any questions, episode ideas, guest pitches, or sponsor inquiries can be sent into info@dnatoday.com. Be sure to follow us on social media, especially so you don't miss a giveaway. We are at DNA Today Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and more. Please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. Here's a bonus. If you do and send us a screenshot, I'll give you a shout out on the show. DNA Today is created, hosted, and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our team includes communications lead, Corinne Merlino, video lead, Amanda Andrioli, outreach intern, Sonia Tanaker, social media intern, Kajal Patel, and graphic designer, Ashlyn Anokian. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.